Welcome to the Eric Anders Lang Show, everybody. I'm very excited for our two guests today. We haven't had many episodes with three.
It's good.
It's good, right?
It's good, yeah. We can have a good conversation, hopefully.
So, Pierce, Andy, we are here. You guys, obviously, I mean, do people come up to you and say, thank you for having the largest YouTube channel for golf ever?
People come up to thank us for the tips that we give, which is great, really. I think we do, you know, when we travel around the world now, obviously we're here in LA, and wherever we go, if we go to a golf club, then, you know, somebody comes up and says thank you.
Right.
We haven't had anyone come up and do anything sort of bad yet, Pierce, but I'm sure that might happen one day.
We've had some good ones. We had a guy who had a tattoo, a Me and My Golf tattoo on his forearm.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And Take Charge. And this was just after we'd changed the logo. So if he'd have done it like a month before and we'd have changed that, I think he would have been a little bit upset.
Yeah, he'd have been outdated.
Can you bring that mic a little closer there, Andy? Thanks. Where was the tattoo?
On his forearm. And he even put Take Charge on there as well.
He
was a tattoo artist and did it himself.
On his forearm, like on the inside?
On the inside, yeah.
Okay, that's a very personal spot.
Yeah, it was covered. There were loads of other ones there, so it was a bit of a mess, really. No, it was good.
But you guys very recently became the largest golf YouTube channel on planet Earth.
It's been there for a while, hasn't it?
Yeah,
that we were looking at, I was saying to Evan earlier about we were chasing down PGA Tour for a long time. And that was the one that we wanted to get past. And yeah,
so got him. What did you do on that day? Did you just celebrate, pat yourself on the back?
Do you know what? That's something that we never do. We should do more of that, I think.
We should
celebrate some of the milestones. But I think we just love getting out there and sort of grinding all the time, looking at ways of getting better. And I think sometimes we're guilty of just not stopping and going, actually, we've done some good things here. But yeah, we need to celebrate a little bit more. Tonight, please.
Yeah, there we go. Let's do it tonight.
Celebrating tonight. We're kind of, it was the people that are listening to this podcast in their car or on a train or in a plane or... There's maybe on a skateboard, I don't know, or on a golf course. We are wearing a coat and tie.
Yeah.
We are in a wood laden boardroom of one of the nicest golf clubs in America or in the world. Bel Air Country Club. This is your first time here?
Absolutely. It is, yeah. I mean, we just had a good look outside and we're like, right, we need to play golf.
Phenomenal looking golf course.
It is.
And the sun is so obviously setting as well, so it's like, yeah, it's perfect.
It's extra nice. You guys have had an interesting Los Angeles day. Can you tell Pierce people a little bit about the day so far?
I mean, do you know what? I mean, we got in here yesterday. We've been filming down in San Diego for 10 days with some bad weather as well. What's going on there? We don't expect this when we come to California.
Terrifying.
2 days of rain.
Come here.
Terrifying.
For the sun. So we did that. We got here, obviously, yesterday. And today we played golf with you. Four holes. Kind of a vlog style thing. I mean, there were some really good shots, actually, some decent shots on a very interesting golf course. We got to play with Mary Lou and Carl as well, a five ball. With guys playing golf with no shoes on. It was kind of a good vibe, wasn't it?
Yeah, the barefoot bros there were there, wasn't they? Making some noises on the
last
hole.
They were loud. I think they might have had a few drinks before they got to the
ninth
hole.
They got pretty wild. Well, they've been playing nine holes in 3 hours, so I would be pretty yelling too.
The bins were full.
We played Penmar, which is, if you live in LA, it's obvious to you. It's the Venice nine-hole course. And if you don't know that, if you don't live in LA, you'll love to see the video that's going to come out tomorrow.
Yeah.
We have this great little video that, you know, it obviously hasn't been edited yet because...
So we love Venice, and it actually is. Now you just said that, it's like, oh yeah, okay. Now that kind of makes sense.
Right.
It's exactly like what Venice is like.
Well, apparently, yes. It's the most popular golf course in LA, apparently, as well. Mary Lou was saying it was the most played golf course in LA.
I'm actually curious to know about Mary Lou's statistics, because, I mean, it's possible, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, it certainly took 3 hours to play nine holes, and it took us an hour and a half to play four.
Yeah.
That's about right for us, normally.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
So you guys, you said you don't celebrate that much. You don't, why? I mean, you guys, I feel like the story about when you guys met, which I want you to tell in a second, it's one of the coolest stories out there because I don't know. I think a lot of people would probably assume you guys were almost casted together. You know what I mean? To do this online business, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you're fit for it. You're both like charismatic and good looking and easy to talk to and good listeners. That's obviously what you need.
I like it.
Can I have a job?
Do this again.
But like, you know, I mean, it's like you don't really examine or I don't know. I don't question where you guys came from, right? Because I'm just assuming, oh, yeah, you guys like, it's just like everybody else. But no, you guys were kids. and you just like met in a pro shop. But at what point, you know, like you have that story, and then I don't know. I mean, we talked about it a little bit while we were playing golf today, but I'm always fascinated by hearing success stories and the takeaways that you guys have had. Can you just like run with that topic?
Yeah, you know what? I mean, I know Andy was telling you earlier, so I'll tell you my version and see how close they are. But I mean, we were both junior members at a course called Oxley Park in the middle of England, Wolverhampton, both born in the same hospital.
Similar course to this place, wasn't it? In the middle of the housing estate.
Yeah, very similar. Ford houses, yeah. No, not at all.
But so, wait, so you were joking because saying it's
similar? I was joking, yeah, it was nothing like this. It's in the middle of like a council estate, yeah. Totally different to this. English humor that was then, building piss.
The one thing I will say, the Goodyear blimp we've just seen, the Goodyear factory in the UK was right next door to it, so you'd see the Goodyear blimp up there as well. So there is a comparison.
Similar.
So anyway, we
smelled like rubber.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, absolutely. So we had the we played junior golf together. We always said that we should set up an academy. You know, we both turned pro. Our golf club with a lot of guys.
And when you say turn pro, you mean like PGA?
PGA, yeah. So right. PGA training. So we went through that, a few years ago now. And we always said when we qualified, oh, we should do something. We were always very keen. I don't think we realized we weren't good enough to play tournament golf. But we always loved teaching. We always loved helping people. So we eventually got this chance where Andy worked at his driving range. There was a spot opened up there. We ran an academy for like 6.5 years. And we did really well with it. We made a lot of changes there. And we really enjoyed, obviously, coaching people. But then...
And is this like pre-TrackMan?
Oh yeah.
Pre-TrackMan. So crazy. Yeah. So you've got like so how are you teaching people? Can we just segue into how teaching has changed really quick and come back to the story?
Oh yeah. I mean, the good thing with us is we actually learned to coach without a video camera. Really, I know the video camera with was the video. Around, no, without. Yes, yeah, so that was.
You know
good.
What? I feel like sometimes I do too many segues. So of those of you listening, I'm sorry. We're going to come back to this subject of how teaching has changed. But let's go back to the other subject that I've already forgotten what it was.
So we played junior golf. Then we obviously turned pro. And then we said, look, let's set up a business. We set up the business. So it's Andy's Place. All three.
How did you come up?
Complex.
Is this me and my golf?
No, this is Three Hams Golf Complex. This is Proudman and Ward Golf Academy.
Proudman and Ward.
Yeah, very original, as you can tell.
Old school. I like it. You know what? It sounds more expensive.
It does, doesn't it? So we set
this could be the elite section now. Proudman and Ward videos.
That's a branch off.
There you go.
But we set this up, and we were teaching a lot. We were putting like 250 new golfers a week through some beginner golfers in beginner classes, and then we had all our other lessons we were doing. We had other coaches working for us. It was going great. Wow. And then we kind of had this, probably haven't told this exact story yet, but we had this realization within the same month pretty much. So we had a rent review meeting, and we actually went
What's
in.
What's a rent review?
A rent review, so with our landlord. So we the lease, so we were looking at the lease of the driving range.
The driving range,
so we had the coaching rights there.
So you basically bought two stalls or a stall?
So it was effectively three range bays, but then it turned into an indoor
facility. How much does that cost for three range bays?
We were paying over, for the teaching rights, which allows other coaches to go there under our guise, it was like £30,000 a year.
A year, okay. And then is that the same setup around the world, or is this typical?
I would say a lot of people paid rent on a range bay, but we were paying it for the
whole. It's kind of like a barber.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that. Yeah. It's paying for a stall. Except instead of cutting people's hair, you're.
It'd be more important than that.
I think the great thing about
saving lives.
About the rent review was as well, we were paying a lot of rent and the business was really busy. And we were like, how are we going to continue to coach, 6 days a week till 9 o'clock at the night? We're like, we're just lacking something here. We can't do this till we're 60. There's something got to be.
It's
more
too
out
one
there.
To one. Yeah. It's exhausting.
Yeah, and it was like, but we can't continue to do this. Even as much as we loved it to coach 50 people a week and just churn them out and, coach till 9 on a night, it was like not achievable. So we said, well, let's just quit this.
Whoa.
Let's just finish. We said, let's just finish.
Proudman and Ward,
done.
Really?
It literally was within the same month, we had the same realization. So we went into this review meeting about, negotiating how we can get the price lower. We went in there going, right, okay, let's do this deal. Let's save up money. I had a 15-month deal we agreed on. We saved up money so we could then, as soon as we finished, we could travel. So we told the landlord that we're leaving. He thought we were bluffing. He thought we were doing
really?
It. We were starting to get some real good prices back on the review. Cars were coming in and all sorts. We're like,
whoa.
Damn, we should have done this a while ago.
Whoa.
But we weren't bluffing. We were going.
And when is this?
This is 2012.
Oh, wow.
So 2012. We left the UK. We went 107 days around the world. We flew straight to New York. we were staying in hostels. So we were in hostels in New York, Miami.
You guys are both single.
Yeah, we were both seeing somebody yeah, when we went out there.
That didn't last very long though.
After we were out there for a couple of months, but we were in the hostel in. I mean, in our first hostel in New York, we got a Chinese girl who gave him the Chinese for sesame allergy because he's allergic to sesame.
Oh, really?
So all sorts of going on. Then
you cured allergies on this trip?
Not quite.
But we were in Miami, and the guy who was in my bunk had just been released from prison. Tried to sell one of the other guy's drugs. So it was this guy, Doug, from LA. He was in his 50s. It was just ridiculous. So we were there. Then we went to Orlando, Chicago, 3 weeks on the West Coast here, which we fell in love with. We knew the moment we stepped off the plane, we were going to love this place and wanted to live here forever. And that's still the case.
Sure.
Went to Australia, Hong Kong, China, and then back.
And at this point, had you guys seen the world yet in some form or fashion?
A little bit, but not like that.
Okay.
Yeah. We've been to the States before, but no, not like
but
that.
But hadn't been to these far off this. I mean, Australia's as far as you can get from England.
Yeah. Pretty much, yeah.
And we filmed little bits around that trip as well. So this is 2012. We filmed little vlogs and little bits along that trip. That was the start of me and my golf, really. The sort of the bare roots of it that was. And it's still, that's still available.
Is it?
Yeah, I can't wait.
We're going to bring them out. We're going to bring them out. Watch.
Yeah, my hair's darker. Pierce's hair's pretty similar still.
When you say you were filming, like what equipment did you have?
We did it on a mobile. Some of the stuff was done on a mobile phone. So we went to like Jim McLean's golf school and filmed some 3D stuff there. And it was just all done on a mobile phone. And yeah, it was interesting. And the hostel experience, I'd love to do it again and film the whole experience. Because
you would do that again voluntarily?
Yeah, well,
yeah, yeah, it's a very hard way to travel.
Yeah. It was.
Well, we worked out. I mean, it's not so much now. We reckon when we travel now, we carry each person 70 kilos of stuff. Golf clubs, camera bag, suitcase.
Whenever you board a plane.
Yeah. So we did that.
Which is a pounds 120, 130?
Yeah.
That's a lot of bags.
Yeah.
That's a lot of bags.
We were doing that. We weren't doing that much, but we were doing around about 50 kilos. But we had to catch a flight from JFK to Miami, and we actually got on the subway system, the train systems.
No, you didn't. With all the bags.
Oh yeah, in rush hour. We weren't popular. We were getting kicked out.
At least you have good accents.
Yeah.
Right? So you could at least.
Excuse me. Don't do that.
Yeah. Pardon me. And everyone's like, get the fuck out of here. How is that different? I mean, you know, you guys love America, but I mean, is it weird? I mean, how is it? How do you notice it being different? I mean, you've been here dozens of times. Do you still see any differences when you come over here?
Well, in the people, you mean?
I don't know, in general. I mean, I'm just thinking overall, you know, because when I go to Europe, I see the things like small roads, small cars, right? I mean, it's the stupid shit, but I mean, you guys might see something interesting about here.
Yeah, I think the experiences over here are a lot better in terms of the people, the staff that you meet. They enhance your experience a lot.
And customer service.
I think so, yeah, and that's a big difference. You go to England after you've been here for a few weeks, and you go, God, this is really bad back home. And I think that's the noticeable difference, really.
And, you know, our friends say to us all the time, why do you love it out there? And we tell them this. You know, obviously, like California, it speaks for itself, but also the people as well, like Andy says there. And they say, oh, it's all BS, you know, and they're all, you know, it's all fake, and they're only doing it for money. I'm like, well, look, I'd rather someone be fake and nice to me than horrible and true to me.
Right. Well, you know, I've always had, because I lived in New York for about as long as I lived in LA now, 10 years each. And the difference between New York and LA I've come up with is in LA, they'll say, let's hang out, and you'll never hang out. In New York, they'll just say, I don't want to hang out with you.
Yeah.
You know, or like, they'll just kick it to you straight, which, I don't know. It's one of the two. But so how did you come up with the name Me and My Golf?
Well, you know, we sat in a pub in Cannock, which is in the UK. And we're like, we've got to come up with something that's personal.
And how long have you been done with the trip at this point?
We came up with a name before the trip, didn't we?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
The trip was
the March. Was it March or was it
April? March 27th, 2012. I remember. Remember it.
Well, watch out!
So
I know.
We came up with a name. Then it would have been around about the 28th of Feb. Which is when Arsenal played Birmingham in the League Cup final.
Was that in
this bar in Cannock?
Oh, okay.
Which is bizarre. And in fact, actually, what was the bizarre thing this year? We did a photo shoot at a guy who's got a camera studio in Cannock, and it was snowing, and we were walking through the streets with all our gear and all loads of clothes to take all these different images, and we walked past that bar, and I think we worked out it was like a 5 years and one day to the day that we actually figured it out.
Yeah. What do you make of coincidences like that?
I'm going to put a bet on that.
not a lot, really. I don't think that me and Pierce aren't necessarily like superstitious in any way or anything like that. But you know, I think it just brings the memories back and think, God, actually, there's, you know, we've done some good stuff over the last 5 years, yeah. 6 years.
It was hard. It was hard. We would, you know, we when we first came back in 2012 from that trip, we spent all our money, you know, so we had nothing. You know, we were doing all sorts. We were coaching a little bit. We still had some clients who wanted to come and see us, but we're obviously trying to set up me and my golf, you know, properly. And we were trying to do, we had a friend who was in the energy broker, and we were trying to do a little bit of the selling of that. We were paying ourselves £50 a week, you know. It's like,
oh, that's a good salary.
Yeah, it was good. We were doing well with it.
60 now. Yeah. Upped it up a little bit.
You guys have done well. That's great. Why are all, I mean, you're part of a canon, right? There's a handful of groups out there doing this, right? Yeah. There's you guys, there's Rick, there's Peter. You guys obviously played with them. Mm-hmm. You know them very well.
Yeah.
You got Mark, right? Yeah. You were saying Mark was maybe came out a little bit before you guys.
He was the first.
He's probably the reason that we got into it, really.
Really?
We saw him doing stuff.
Tell me about, and the people who are listening who don't know Mark Crossfield, tell me a little about him.
So he's a golf pro from down south in the UK, in Exeter. And he started off doing sort of, I think, club reviews, you know, posting golf instruction and tips on that. And we watched him do loads of stuff. He was in this driving range bay in Exeter and, you know, cold England. And he was constantly putting stuff out. And we were watching some of his stuff. And somebody said, oh, he's making like $400 a month on here.
And you're like, we're making.
And we're like, well, no, we hadn't even started then. And we're like, he's making money doing this. He's putting videos up and he makes money doing this. And we're like, well, should we continue to do this? It's obviously a good thing if there's a business from it. And we can do what we love and make some videos. Like, okay, well, why don't we get into this? So because of probably him doing it, he was the sort of first guy really in the golf industry who was doing anything decent. And then I think he's really the reason that we got into it. Really.
And he was very good as well to us because we, you know, we spoke. I mean, obviously his content is, you know, some people watch it, I think, and go, oh, that's a bit strange. You know,
he's a bit bizarre.
Yeah, he's bizarre. But he's, you know, he's got a good following for sure. But he gave us our first sort of boost, I suppose. You know, yeah. We spoke to him and said, look, you know, do you want to do some content? He says, right, he'll come to the Asprey with Gorilla James. Okay. I don't think he's doing anything. I mean, he might be coming back doing some long drive stuff. We had a little course vlog, mini course vlog, and that did really well for us because it gave us a good boost. And
how would you describe Mark? Because I don't know him very well. We've never met. Disruptive.
I think disruptive is a good word. He's a nice guy. I mean, we spoke to him quite a few times.
You can't say he's a nice guy to everybody.
No, he isn't. I mean, he's been good with us.
He definitely is, but he's a little different off camera. He's not quite as disruptive off camera.
Oh, really? Oh, really? Yeah. Because I got to take that he's salty.
Salty.
A bit. I mean, I don't know him.
Yeah.
But also, you know, it's one of these things. It's so funny when, I'd be curious to know this about what our interaction, because we've both known of each other, and then you meet each other and you're like, oh yeah, they're different than I thought, or the same as that, or whatever. And you know, you never know what someone's going to be like, right? But anyway, I don't know. Mark and I were on some type of Twitter thread,
okay,
where I was somehow involved in this tweet, and I don't really go on Twitter, so I'm like, even when I open up the app, I'm already confused. And so somehow Mark's tweeting at me and 8 other people, and someone pissed him off at some point in this Twitter feud.
Yeah, and they pull you in. I think a lot of people love to pull the guys in to see if they can get them to have a go.
But... they were being nice to me.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, again, this is totally irrelevant, but Mark gets you guys involved. And so then I guess what I'm getting at is, why are all you guys from England?
It's
a weird one, because we started and then we sort of knew that we knew Mark, we knew Rick, and then Pete sort of got involved. Pete was good friends with Rick, and we were like almost this little family from the UK who knew what we were doing. We're all bringing each other up, and we're like, why are none of the guys from the US doing it? Why aren't, you know, it was a rare thing that was, we didn't see any of the US guys. There was one guy from Canada.
Yeah, yeah.
Sean Clements. He was doing some stuff.
Yeah.
But we didn't see any of the guys from the US doing
it. I think it's easy, though, because the thing is, to start with, and one of the other guys, Chris Ryan Golf, actually, who does some stuff and is doing really well now. He went to the same club as us as a junior as well. So there's like 3 of us from the same club that are doing this.
It's so crazy. Yeah. All started together.
Unbelievable. Yeah. But when you know that Mark Crossfield's down the road and you can speak to him, and when you know that Rick and Peter are up the road in Manchester, you can actually speak to him. I think you know that you've got encouragement in a group that you know, even though you might not speak to each other every day, that you've got this, you can do this. Whereas if you're in the States, And it takes a long time as well. You have to be really patient. I mean, sure, you're seeing that as well now. It's taken a while for you to get these views up to what you want. And I know you'll always want to be better in interaction and watch time and what have you. You got to be patient with that. And there's no money in it to start with unless you've got funding. Yeah. So it's like, well, okay, how would a golf coach, we always think of it, a golf coach out here who teaches 6 days a week, why is he going to then stop coaching 1 day a week or half a morning a week? And then just so he can then... He's going to lose revenue so he can do something else. Right. So there's that
foresight. I don't see the immediate sort of payback, which is, I think, you've got to be able to sacrifice a lot of time and say, right, I'm all in for X amount of years. I don't want anything back from it. I just want to sort of build some traction and do it. But you have to be patient, yeah.
So you guys were all in England. I still don't understand it. But, you know, it just happened there. I like it. I mean, did you guys know Wayne DeFrancesco?
The name rings a bell.
Why do we know that name?
The guy's like the hipster of, but he's not a hipster. I mean, he's like, but he goes so deep. He's a 20-minute YouTube video just using screens, just using the screen by screen, you know, like with lines.
Yeah, I have seen him,
So he, so literally it's like.
Is it the real detail about stuff?
Yeah.
Is it, yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Anyway, when I got into golf, I don't know. I wasn't really ever big into YouTube, so I never really found anybody. I didn't know, I don't know. I don't know. That's not how I digested the information, but I was watching this guy, Wayne DeFrancesco. I don't know why. And I don't know. It's just, it's a funny thing for me. I was thinking if you knew who he was, it would be an interesting story because he's definitely like, it's confusing.
Yeah. I have like, seen, I remember now you mentioned all the lines on the screen. I've seen it and there's a lot of lines on
the
screen.
It's insane.
Yeah,
the amount of lines. No, I mean, you need to, maybe the why he makes money is because you have to watch the video five times to figure it out. So, okay, let's talk about the genesis of teaching, right? I mean, it's come a long way. I'm sure we're better off now where we're at. I know for me as a filmmaker, you know, I'm using the tools now, knowing the things that I knew then, whatever, whether it was like actual film or whatever, you know, or like editing in much more like, you know, complicated ways. So you're able to use the tools better. Does that apply to working with people on a golf swing?
Yeah, you know what? I think the one thing we always have to bear in mind when you're working on someone's golf game, it's a person at the end of it. So it is always going to be the person.
There's a human swinging the club.
There's a human being there, exactly.
Sometimes
we're very complex. We are very complex beings.
Absolutely. And that's the hardest part, you know, because obviously, look, you're trying to change their habit, which is the hard thing to do, obviously. They don't like doing that, and then it is hard to do it anyway. But I think you're just going to be so careful now with all this equipment that you're allowed to use on a student, a human being,
right,
that you don't confuse it. Because it's so easy to do it. I mean, you can try and show off and tell everybody how much you know about the golf swing, and then you just wreck them. So, you know, it literally is. I always hear the best coaches talk about, okay, I've got all of this information. I've pulled all of this information. I'm going to pull this out and this out, and that's all that person's getting.
Whoa.
So they're just getting a couple of little things. They can understand what their roadmap is,
yeah,
but they need to understand what they've got to do now. There's no point thinking about the end destination if they've got to go around the corner somewhere.
Yeah, some of the best coaches say the least. I think that's we were talking about it the other day. It's so easy when you've got all this information available, TrackMan, BodyTrack, to just hurl loads of information at somebody.
Right.
But you've got to be very careful what you throw at somebody because how they think and process it can just really mess them up. And I think, you know, if you've got a TrackMan and you've got someone who's swinging 5 degrees left, attack angle 6 degrees down. How do you tell him? What do you say to him that's going to help him? You know, all these numbers and you throw it all at him. It's like, well, how's he going to process? How's Dave Smith, who works as a doctor, how's he going to process that information?
Right. And I mean, do you at some point make a maximum number of, you know, lessons? Are you like, I can only tell this person three things or something like that? Or how do you know when enough is enough?
For one particular person?
Yeah. Do you still teach one particular person?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah, 100%.
How much does that cost?
Yeah. How much are you willing to pay?
In person or online?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
So do it in person?
We do it in person still, yeah. Wow. So we've probably averaged about 1 day a week this week. So
really?
Yeah. I think it's interesting because a lot of people, we don't necessarily promote our coaching.
No.
But the way we look at it, we're golf coaches who have a YouTube channel, as opposed to, you know, YouTubers who do a little bit of coaching. You know, we're passionate about coaching. We still coach. We actually had our first victory on the European Tour the other day. One of our guys we've been coaching since he was 11. Aaron Ryde won on the European Tour, which was just incredible to see him finally get to it. But this guy's going to be special as well, we think.
That's so great.
But people don't know that. People just see us as presenting online.
Did he call you and say congratulations?
Do you know what? He sees it as a team effort. It's mainly him. It is mainly him, obviously.
And it is interesting because he wears the logo, doesn't he? He does wear the logo, which is fantastic for us. But I think a few people now are saying, oh, so Me and My Golf sponsor him. It's like, we do a little bit different to that.
You're investing.
Mm. Yeah.
Right?
It's good to be a part of that.
So, okay. Well, do you have any questions there from the Instagram? We posted an Instagram this morning, and I think we have 80,000 questions.
I'm sure there's questions about clothing. There's always questions about clothing.
We're not matching right now.
We are not matching.
There is a lot of questions about the clothing. Why did they... The question was... okay, you know what? First, I'm going to go with first is our... this is our resident podcast contributor. His name's Benny.
Hi, Benny.
Benny Ortiz. Benny and I, we probably have the same mother. Not even as a joke. I don't have my glasses. Luckily, I don't need to. What are some American golf customs / traditions, etc., that you wish folks in the UK would adopt, or vice versa? What are the most important intangibles you've learned through the years of instructing? Okay, well, first question first.
Music.
Yeah.
Loud music when playing golf.
Yeah.
Thumbs up, thumbs down.
Thumbs up.
Thumbs up.
Thumbs up. Huge.
Very cool.
And bare feet.
Yeah, from today, bare feet.
Bare feet and music.
Music, 100%.
Okay.
And five balls.
Five balls, barefoot music. So it was a big day.
Yeah.
Okay, and then what are the most important intangibles you've learned through your years of instructing golf? Benny's going hard with this question.
In terms of just what you mean, like what we've learned in terms of how to coach people, or?
Well, all I have, I feel like we're literally dissecting one of Benny's puzzles here. I don't know. I mean, what are the most important intangibles? I'm going to have to interpret Benny.
Yeah, I'm going to have to interpret this.
I'm going to say this. I know Benny, all right? And I know that he's probably referring to a life lesson that maybe exists for you off the golf course. Am I right? Hey, family. what is the most important life lessons that you've learned through your years of instructing golf?
Ooh, that's a great question.
Thank you. Thanks, Benny.
Thanks, Benny. Wow.
Okay.
Cut.
There's always going to be bad. There's always going to be some bad stuff going on. So if you can roll up on a golf course and understand that you're always going to hit some bad shots, it's always never going to be exactly how you want it, then you can just roll with it, get on with it, and move on. Because that's always going to happen in life, you know. Bad stuff's going to happen on the golf course and off. So if you can just deal with it, move on, and just enjoy what you've got out there, I think that's a big one.
I like that.
I would agree. Ditto. I would agree. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
100%. All right, that's good. Okay, this one's from JBot8. How do you know when you should try to fix your swing with the videos versus just getting a lesson?
Oh, that's a good question as well. I mean, I think you got to understand, if you're not in control of that ball flight and you have no idea why it's happening, go and get some advice first. You know, you can, whether it be, I mean, look, you can get that advice on YouTube now. As I say, it's what we do, and there's plenty of other guys doing some really good stuff now. So understand how the ball flight, what it does, and then track it back. And then there's plenty of information out there. But we're always saying that
I guess the answer is you should get a lesson if you can afford it.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, exactly.
You should always get
a lesson. Would always be the most preferable thing to do, because the guy who or girl who is there is gonna be able to hands-on work with you. But if it's Sunday night at 9 o'clock and you need to play well the next day and you need a little bit of help, then you know, get on YouTube.
Okay, that's like the first 5 years of my golfing life. You know what? To sidetrack here again, if you're listening to the pod, you're not on YouTube. If you're in the car or whatever. We played golf today, and we met a guy who's today was his first round of golf.
Yeah.
And that was so crazy to me. And then we also played with someone who had never taken a lesson.
Yeah.
And she was a self-proclaimed golf addict. And I was like, this phone got locked. And I was like, lost my fucking train of thought. I was thinking about how much I love lessons. Mm. And I was thinking about how hard it would be to play golf without a lesson. I just don't know if I could do it. I think I would get too frustrated. In fact, Evan, we're talking about this. My business partner, who's standing right over here, also wearing a suit. You had kind of a lesson, aha moment, maybe recently.
Yeah, you know, I am probably not the first person that's been inspired to take golf maybe a little bit more seriously from watching Eric's and your guys' content. You know, I've been a golfer for about 10 years. I've loved it, but I don't think it was until the last couple of years that I really connected with seeing myself as a good golfer, and then golfing with Eric, seeing myself as a great golfer. And I think switching the definition in my head and then it kind of caused me to get re-inspired by the game. So I went and took a couple lessons with a pro down here, and it was transformative, to say the least, to put it extremely mildly. Seeing, having someone be focused on me and my golf improvement for an hour.
Me and golf, we got that in there. Yeah.
I think we just earned like $8,000.
I can't help it.
But natively integrated.
Yeah. I'll take lessons. You know, it's really transformative to have a dedicated time when people are focused on making me enjoy the sport better and making me connect with the things that I can be naturally good and better at, and then also work to improve upon. Right. It's really a transformative thing. I recommend everybody go online to beinmygolf.com and check it out.
It's amazing, though, how many people are scared to take lessons because they think it's just going to destroy their game. They're going to get really bad. But I think if you go for the lessons and you find a good coach, he's going to work with what you've got. As you said, Evan, he works focusing on you, and the right coach will just work with what you've got and fine-tune what you can do, as opposed to saying, right, we've got to take your swing apart and rebuild this. And it doesn't work like that.
I think that's a really good point. So anyone who's thinking about getting golf lessons, when you do book that golf lesson and go and have that lesson with whoever, you know, make an assessment of that first lesson. And what was that person like with you? Did they seem interested in what you were doing? Did they just say straight away, right, hit five wedges to loosen up, 7-iron video, right, TrackMan, okay, this is what you're doing this wrong. That just is not the way to teach someone how to play golf. You need to understand that person. You need to become familiar with that person, and they need to understand why they're at that place, because everything that's led up to their golfing career has led up to that point. So what's happened before that point? It can't just be what's going to happen over those next five shots.
Well, because golf too is like, unlike most things. I mean, what does a grown adult, what other activity does a grown adult say, I need to go get trained how to do this? And I've been doing it for years.
Yeah.
Is there anything else? I mean, you must have thought about it.
Yeah.
What else is there? Bowling, baseball, cards, even business.
I can't even think about what they would do.
You would not even go to a business coach unless you're really smart, right? It's either you're really smart or you're really dumb. Mm. Those are the only times you get a lesson.
It's only like personal training, isn't it? It's only in the fitness industry you can relate to. They're going to get a trainer. Help from that. That's the only sort of similarity, I think.
Oh, that's interesting. I would never thought. Yeah, trainer, of course. Yeah. Trainer for me, though, is basically if I lay the cash down, I'm going to go work out because I'm lazy. Well, I mean, I'm not really lazy, but you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. A lot of people would do that. They need someone there.
Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah, the lesson. And also there's just a weird part of the lesson where, all right, whatever. Let's just go to questions here. This is from M_Rollins. What do you see is the next thing which gives the edge to tour players? / what is the next big, a lot of people are asking these double questions.
Yeah.
I'm just going to go with the first one.
What's the next best thing that's going to help tour players?
Yeah, the next thing which gives the edge to tour players. I think they're talking about a device.
I think there's next device. Okay.
Yeah.
Next
so device, if we come up with it right now, I'll bleep it all out and we'll start a business together.
Do you know what? It's a tricky one. I don't know whether there's going to be, well, there's obviously going to be more coming out, but
I think there'll be something, there will be something that will tap into the mind that will be able to figure out a little bit more about how they process their games. So, so basically, you know, let's think of, I don't know, this podcast is going to go up January. Let's say it's the Farmers. Jason Day won it a year ago. Why is he not going to win it the next year?
I know.
Why is he not going to win it next week? Why can they not replicate that event time after time? So there's obviously a reason. Now, obviously, there's a lot of great golfers out there. But how can they stop slumps throughout a year? So if you look at the majority of PGA Tour players, anyone who has a good season probably means they played well for 5 weeks. So that's a good season. Doesn't mean they're going
five
to be
five out of 40.
Yeah, exactly. Well, they might play. I mean, they might play 20 to 30 events, but it doesn't mean that they, you know, doesn't mean they've played well every event. So how can they bridge that gap? And you got to look at it and think, well, it can only really be mental. Because physically now they're all really good.
Nothing's changing.
The technology is really good. The information they get is generally very good. So they need to figure out a way of getting that other 90% that's going on in their head, I think.
Yeah, and what do you think that is? I mean, you must know.
Do you know what? I think it still surprises me when, from being around the events and seeing some of these tour pros, how some of them are still mentally very, very bad. And you'd expect somebody who plays on tour to have it all figured out. You know, I've got, I'm mentally strong, my mindset's great, but we've watched some of these guys and you're going, God, that's just like so, so bad.
Like, for example, you don't need to be specific with names, but I mean, what have you seen?
Well, just like how they react to bad shots, you know, carrying it on to the next shots, and you know, just their temperament of how they deal with the bad stuff. Because the bad stuff, as I mentioned earlier, the bad stuff's always going to be there, but how they process that and actually, you know, they're very emotional on the golf course, and sometimes the emotions can get in the way of actually performance. And as Pierce mentioned, for me, I think in terms of what's going to push on the boundaries of the new PGA Tour pros, more athleticism. The guys, look at Cameron Champ, who's just come on the scene, who bombs it 330 averaging, you know. They're all going to be athletes before golfers, and a lot of them now are mentally better coming through because some of the prep that they do to get to the tour, they're already sort of tour pros. So I think the mindset of the new guys are going to be better. But
there's two things I totally agree with them. There's two things that I would look at is, I really strongly believe that you remember the Curtis Strange video, can't we, with Tiger Woods? You know, you'll learn.
Yeah.
Okay, which is phenomenal because Tiger did learn very quickly, and Curtis Strange, good luck with that.
He learned.
He learned
Curtis
as well.
Learned something else.
Absolutely. But the thing is now, that didn't happen, that, you know, a golfer would take 6 to 7 to 8 years to come onto the tour and understand how to play. But now Cameron Champ comes in and wins wins in his second event or something like that.
Yeah.
But these guys, you've got to look at them. They're coming out of college. The ball speeds in college are faster. So these guys are, you know, athletes straight away. I think the one good theory that we've heard a lot, and I totally agree to this, is that modern day driver now, they were playing with the same club 15 years ago when they were first starting to play. The modern day driver now, you can just swing it really hard and it will still go relatively straight. So these guys are just fast, fast, fast all the time. But I really believe that by the time a lot of golfers get to 32 to 35, they'll be done. They'll be burnt out.
Back.
Well, body maybe. But I just think, look at how much money they've earned. Oh, you know, there's so much money to earn now.
I don't need any more money.
Yeah, I don't. What do I need to do now? Do I need to wake up at 5 o'clock and go and practice? And the wife's giving me earache, and the kids want me to see them. You know, how can they keep up that motivation?
Right.
There's probably 20 guys on the tour max who have got this motivation where they wake up every single day and all they think about is golf.
Yeah, you look at people like Brooks Koepka, who's sort of came out and said that it's a job to him. He's not a golf geek. He doesn't sort of watch the golf. He's an athlete first. He's a golfer second. He's going to be in the game. He's going to do his bit, and then he's probably going to get out and retire.
Isn't you don't think he'll play golf anymore?
Well, no, I think he'll play golf for a bit, but I don't see him playing golf, you know, like getting to the senior tour and wanting to do that. Because I think to do that and to continue on that long, you've got to be so passionate and for the game. And we were speaking to someone the other day about Phil Mickelson and how much he loves the game. He said he's just absolutely in love with the game still.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I think that's what's
more old school almost.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
I think some of these guys are going to come on and maybe not have the same passion.
Yeah.
Some of them will. The best will, I think.
What? Another question here from Scotch Californian. I wonder if that sort of defines what's happening right now a little bit. But you're not Scottish, so never mind. I'm quite ignorant, actually, if you haven't noticed yet. How much does wind come into affecting your direction on shot shape?
Yeah, 100%, lots. People underestimate all the time. So if it's a sideways, left to right, right to left, they underestimate if it's into.
So because you hit this shot and it reaches the apex, and is that when the wind really starts to mess with it?
Yeah.
Right up there?
Yeah.
As soon as it starts to slow down, obviously the faster the ball is, it's not going to be affected that much, but that's why a lot of people say, well, I hit this shot, but it starts to go towards the end, especially if you've got any curve on it as well.
You know, we just talked a lot about science, and we're talking about wind and kind of how that science, I guess, physics. What is the most interesting scientific part of golf or the golf swing to you guys? I mean, you deal with it all the time, right?
Scientific science.
I think the new stuff with the ground, so the pressure and you know, how the pressure's moving between left and right, the pressure trace, the center of mass, how that moves. So I think that's a really interesting part, and how that pressure trace relates to power, but also swing direction and path. So you can tell a lot about where the pressure is and how it's influencing the rest of the golf swing, which I think is really good.
And you're talking about these
not for a podcast, by the way, what he just said.
It's quite hard to visualize. Those of you in a car, I hope you've pulled over. Don't get into an accident talking to... But you're talking about the plates that you're standing on that, like, read your weight.
Yeah, basically.
This is the advanced lesson.
Yeah.
This is the thing that... So if you turn up for a lesson and you've got, like, a body track on the floor, which is the mat, and then you've got a track man behind, and you've got the video camera, the do we get paid for all that? So these guys are hitting shots, and then suddenly, you know, you've got all this image, you've got all this information about them. That should be, they should still be only getting, okay, we'll just turn your grip a little bit, put the ball a little bit further forward.
Right.
And just, you know, change your tempo a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, with all of that info and with all of the hours of hitting balls, how do you even pick a winner? How on earth can you gamble? How can you, like, people gamble on golf.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you're crazy. It's anybody's game. What happened to that tagline?
So we actually know a guy who works for, they do stats basically. And they're pretty good at predicting who's going to do well on the golf course. And this is huge now. Gambling obviously is huge with, you know, predicting who can do well. So they just keep stats. So they just know trends. So there are certain trends. You look at certain people, they play well. So I always remember Ernie Els would always win in Hawaii. Yeah. Right. The reason he would win in Hawaii was because the greens that he played on in Hawaii were very similar to what they were in South Africa.
Oh, wow.
And so there's all these sort of, you know, sort of trends that you can look
at. Like Ocean's 11 for golf.
Yeah, there we go.
Just breaking it. Here's a really good way to ask this question. He's basically saying, what's your favorite course? But Nicholas Kaufman says, if you could buy any golf course and be the only members allowed, what would it be? Kudos to that really creative question. Austin, did you pick that? Good choice.
You know what? Yeah, you could never keep a great golf course like that to yourself, though, could you? I mean, Augusta for you,
Well, you can bring your friends. You can have guests. You're the only member.
It would have to be Augusta. It wouldn't be any of the golf.
Would you rename Augusta me and my golf course?
Yeah. Me and my Augusta, yeah. I think
me and my green jacket.
Me and my Augusta. Yeah. Me and my green jacket.
Let them play that little tournament.
That's all the questions. There were like 70 comments. Do I have any service? Can I just go rogue here? We got more? I just love the questions. How long have we been going? Let's see.
Questions are good.
Let's take a break for some ads really quick. Everybody, let's talk Stitch Fix, a website all about finding your personal style, which we all know can take lifetimes, especially if you're a golfer. I'm just kidding. I can log in and easily enter all my sizes, and then I'm quickly connected with everything that I need. Stitch Fix is an online personal styling service that finds and delivers clothes, shoes, and accessories to fit your body, budget, and lifestyle. So just go to stitchfix.com/Eric Anders Lang and tell them your sizes, what styles you like, and how much you want to spend on each item. You will be paired with your very own personal stylist who will handpick 5 items to send right to your door. Then you try them on, pay only for what you love, and return the rest. Shipping, exchanges, and returns are always free. Free! There's no subscription required. You can sign up to receive scheduled shipments or get your fix whenever you want. Stitch Fix's styling fee is only $20, which is applied toward anything you keep from your shipment. Get started now at stitchfix.com/Eric Anders Lang, and you'll get an extra 25% off when you keep all 5 items in your box. So that's stitchfix.com/Eric Anders Lang to get started today. stitchfix.com/Eric Anders Lang. Yo, all right, the Adidas, y'all, get into it. I know you may have seen those sick NMDs that I was wearing the other day, the Gore-Tex jams. Anyway, here we go. This is from Adidas. Get the year and your golf game off on the right foot, quite literally. We all know a good golf swing starts from the ground up, and luckily Adidas has you covered. Tour 360, Addi Power Forged, Addi Cross, Addi Pure, all with Boost. That's with a couple extra O's in there for pleasure. The best cushioning in the game, I can attest to that, but also all designed to perform on the course, so all you have to think about is your swing, which is definitely complicated enough. If you're like me, head over to adidas.com, click on the golf section, and find the style that's right for you. You can also follow Adidas Golf, at Adidas Golf, for all the latest news and info. Check it out. All right, so we're back, and thank you for listening to the ads. One of them may have been for Bixby Coffee, whom we have to thank for this wonderful location. Miles, come here. Get on it. Miles, I can show you the camera. I don't know how wide this shot is, but Miles, obviously, the best Christian Bale impression in Hollywood. Here he goes.
Great.
Miles had a question about the interactions you have with fans. Can you follow that up?
So the question I had was, if you had two people who were devout fans and students of me and my golf, and one only listened to podcasts and the other only watched your YouTube videos, but you didn't know which was which, are you confident you could tell the difference between the two? And what are kind of the assets and the vulnerabilities that you can't communicate with one format versus the other?
I think the biggest difference in terms of, I think one of the reasons we created the YouTube channel was we got had that many people who would come to us for lessons and still didn't understand the golf swing. So they knew certain things, but they'd say, I'm trying to keep my head down, or I'm trying to do this, or I'm trying to swing the club back in a straight line. And I think the ability that we've got with YouTube is the graphics that we put in there, we can paint the picture of actually the concept of what everything's supposed to be. So what the golf swing should look like. And if you've got the right concept, it's so much easier to actually produce the right movement. Whereas somebody listening to the podcast, you can sort of, you can talk more about the processes that you go through, and you're unable to paint the picture of actually understanding the golf swing. So I think if somebody only consumed the podcast, maybe they wouldn't have a greater understanding of the golf swing. Whereas somebody who watches the videos, they would probably know their golf swing inside out.
I think you can, with both mediums, though, you can create concept. So that's actually probably the biggest reason why golfers struggle, because they have a concept in their head. I've got to take the club back straight. I've got to keep my head down. You know, I've got to do this. I've got to do that. That's what actually damages growth as a golfer, you know, by having a limiting concept. So you can, but that's the beauty with both of these. So you can create a, you know, the concept of not keeping your head down, for instance, is easy to do in a YouTube video. But you might have something which is a little bit more in-depth. So the concept of a pre-shot routine, you can really get into great depths of that into a podcast. So I think you've got this way of tailoring our content into these different mediums.
Right.
You can go deep in a podcast, I think, really deep. You know, we're talking, you can go for an hour and a half, and you can really get into the mind and mindset as well. Whereas I don't think somebody would watch us for an hour on YouTube talking that much, whereas they're obviously they're visually stimulated with some of the things that we put in there.
It's funny to me. It's a really good question, and I've kind of observed it when I meet people and they're like, oh, I love the show or whatever, I'm a big fan or whatever. I'm like, oh, cool. And that's one thing. But if they say they listen to the podcast, that's personal.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because that's like I'm really putting more of myself into it. It's more of me.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Whereas when you edit a show, this is unedited.
Yeah.
Right, and we're just having a conversation. And so I find that there is a lot more of a personal connection. You guys are backs against the wall over here. What is going on? I feel like you're the Secret Service. Okay. The good question that just came in here, well, it may have been here for hours, is what... this whole thing is about to fall. What would you be doing if you weren't doing this? If you weren't doing what you're doing, what would you be doing?
Oh, that's a good question. We've asked people that before.
We've asked this question so many times and not actually thought to ourselves.
You've never thought about it yourself. Wow. Tables are turned, my friends.
I always remember at school. Yeah, thanks. I always remember at school I wanted to do something to do with sports. So, ooh, crikey. Could it be really boring and saying a coach in some other sport? Yeah, maybe that would work. I don't even know.
I think, what would I be doing? I think it would have to be either something to do with, it'd have to be something to do with helping people, I think. I think one of the things that I like, and I think this is the thing that's probably influenced me, is that from what we've done over the past 6 years, 6 years ago, I wouldn't have believed that I'd be in this position where I am now.
If someone told you that?
If somebody said to me, what are you going to be doing? You're going to be on a podcast in Bel Air Country Club doing this. And it's right. Like, you'll what? Have this
and people are going to know who you are.
Yeah. So yeah. I wouldn't have believed that 6 years ago. So that's changed the way I think about things anything's possible. Whatever you want to do, you can do. So I would do probably something to help people change what they think and how they think to let them understand that they can do whatever they want to do.
Right. That's awesome.
That's a pretty good one, isn't it?
That's cool.
We still got to answer that question properly, though. We'll do that.
I don't know what
we'll
that is.
Yeah. We'll do that
maybe
one day.
You did a really good job of avoiding the question.
Politician. Done.
I see how you separate business-wise. Got it. Yeah. Don't negotiate with Andy. And then I was just thinking about this. You know, do you guys, what is your favorite word in golf?
Shank. No, I don't know. What's the favorite word in golf?
That's fine. You're done. You said yours. What's your first?
Wow. That's another great question. Do you know what? I just, again, I'm going to say this because I'm going to pick two words. I'm going to go Ryder Cup. Just because that tournament. Sorry to bring it up.
You can say. Congratulations. Tournament is just unbelievable. We're not worthy.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I think what that, you know, the competitive juices that are going through those guys. Ooh, geez, I tell you
what a great time. You guys had, I mean... Okay, we can talk about that for 2 years, hopefully.
That's another podcast.
The reason why I ask is because I was thinking about what is your least favorite word? I'm actually more curious about. What do you hate hearing in golf? What are you just like, ugh?
I always. I'm gonna say that. I always.
Oh, you hear that a lot.
Yeah.
I always.
Yeah. Just you know.
Why don't you like that?
I get onto a tee. I always go left here. I always make a bogey here. I always knock it out of bounds. You know, it's like, and that's just straight away. I'm like, you know, just how people talk just frustrates me in golf because they, you know, they're talking themselves down to feel comfortable. So when they do hit it, they go, "I told you." I always do that.
Yeah, told you so.
And you know, I, and it's just such a, again, a limiting thing for the game, because if they're standing on the tee with, you know, negative thoughts already, thinking they're going to play bad, and then they do.
Wow. Told you.
Yeah.
Ooh, that hurts.
And then they can't lose because they're certain. So yeah. If they go, "I always make a bogey here," they make a bogey and they feel good because they told you about it, and then they're certain. They're certain and feel good about it.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, it's a good, that's a good way of protecting yourself to feel bad about making a bogey.
I think maybe he would have been a therapist if he wasn't.
That's a great way of looking at it from a golf coaching point of view. We just hear that all the time.
Yeah.
People just limiting beliefs all the time.
I was thinking that your word you would hate would be slice. Because you're just probably, you must be just sort of sick of it, right? Just like, stop fucking slicing the ball.
I've got consistency. But I say I hate it. I don't hate it because it's something that everybody wants, but it's something that everybody says. I just want to be more consistent. Make me consistent, please.
I'll go on another track. Restriction. Just from
in your body.
Yeah, no. Just in golf. In golf, I still think there's too many things that, you know, what we did today, for instance. I thought that was really cool. I mean, so
barefoot.
Yeah,
no belt.
Why not? I mean, I think there's, I understand the traditions of the sport, and I think they should be upheld for sure.
Yeah.
There definitely should be places where you can actually, you know, just kind of do what you want.
Yeah.
Maybe there's room back in the UK to set something up, Pierce.
Maybe.
It's too cold to walk barefoot.
It is too cold. Yeah.
You don't do that 2 months a year.
You could wear socks.
Frostbite on your feet.
you could play in socks. Well, it's funny. We were joking about this like earlier, but someone had commented in one of my videos, and they wrote, because I was wearing a t-shirt, I had no respect for the game. And my first thought was, but the course itself doesn't have a dress code because it's public. And in America, we have that. Do you guys have that?
I think there's a few golf clubs that have some maybe relaxed restrictions, but I think generally the majority you would have to wear a collar. Majority.
Yeah.
But it is different. It's different in the UK.
The way I look at it, though, is that the game, it's not in the healthiest of states. Mm. You know, we talk about, you know, membership down, participation is okay. But you look at guys and girls who are in there, you know, there's a big problem from 20 to 30 years of age. So there's people out there hitting golf balls and playing, but they're not able to commit to golf because of obviously expenses and things like that. I understand that. But I think there are, you know, what's the game going to be like in 20, 30, 40 years time?
Mm.
You know, I think you have to be worried about it because, you know, it's not in this totally rosy place at all.
Well, and you know, what's funny is the USGA was telling me that more people start the game every year, but more people quit it.
Yeah.
So it's not that we're doing bad PR. It's that we're doing a bad job of taking care of the current golfers.
I agree, yeah, totally.
Which is really, I mean, I enjoy my job and I like it on a 1-to-1 ratio. But when I really decided to put everything I had into it, it was after someone had come up to me and said, "Hey, you know, thank you. You really made me want to go play golf." And I was like, "Well, what? I made you want to do something?" Mm-hmm. And so that's really like the fuel that when we go into the office every day, we work with, you know, it's like there are, I mean, it's kind of a joke, right? The PSA is, are you struggling with your golf game? Are you thinking of throwing your clubs out, selling them at a garage sale?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, are you thinking of not regripping those clubs and just maybe going bowling instead? We can help. You know, watch Adventures in Golf, whatever it is. I mean, because that is really the name of the game. Like, it's such a, I mean, I tell you, when we met this guy, Craig, at the Penmar, who was about to play his first round ever, like, I was getting a little emotional.
Yeah.
Because I was like, amazing. Dudes, do you remember your first round?
Maybe. Ooh. It wasn't like Penmar, I can tell you that. But that's the great thing about that, though, isn't it? His first experience of golf is going to be totally different to our first experience of golf.
Yeah.
He's going to see these guys drinking beers, playing barefoot, and it's like, oh, this is actually quite good fun.
Yeah.
Whereas, it definitely wasn't that like that for me when I was 13, 14 years old.
Yeah.
I had to go for an interview to be in a, you know, with these old men looking at me and to get in the golf club.
Because you could be a member that age, right?
Yeah.
In America, you could never be a member at 13.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah, no, it's very, the whole member public, you know, in America versus the UK is so different, right? You hear, I mean, how much was your membership dues then?
I think it was about £100 for the year.
For a year.
For a year, yeah, which was a junior membership. Maybe £80.
Miles is crying
£80
right now.
£80.
Similar to here, isn't it?
Yeah, it depends on the currency change.
Yeah. And inflation based on 500 years. Yeah, no, I mean, it's interesting. You know, when we took a wonderful trip through Scotland, which is when we met, we started messaging back then, and I was like, let's play together. And obviously timing is the toughest part of our lives. But, you know, we had a wonderful experience of seeing like, oh, you know, here's this 18-year-old kid who works in the pro shop at Leven, and he's also a member. Yeah. And he plays £300 a year, and he plays as much golf as he wants.
That was me.
That was you.
That was me.
How cool is that?
Yeah.
That's so cool. Yeah, here you don't get that. It is not even an option. Which is crazy.
Yeah. Because we wouldn't, if it wasn't so easy for us and cheap to us to do that, I'd get dropped off at 8 o'clock in the morning. I'd be picked up at 8 on the night. It was £100 for the year, which is just crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's so cool.
For the whole year.
So cool. I'm commenting back to somebody unintentionally. hang on.
You're very generous with
there's been some nice questions here. No, very polite
ones
come out.
No, there's no bad ones. I'm not trying to punk anybody. Hang on. Wait. So how? Well, first of all, how did the name come up? We never got that question.
Yeah, no, we never got answers. We tried everything. We looked for. We wanted something personal, so someone could feel as though it was theirs. That's all it was. That was the whole remit behind it. So there was iGolf and there was MyGolf, and we just couldn't get anything. Eventually, we got Me and MyGolf.
And you mean you got the domain, or you just like,
yeah.
or you just were
yeah,
like,
yeah, we checked everything. We were looking at all the domains, and right. we just couldn't find anything that was
in a stormy pub in
Cannock,
in old Cannock.
Yeah.
I want to come check it out.
Yeah, it's a sports bar.
There's been some good nights in Cannock actually all those years ago. But Cannock's an interesting place.
A lot of people talk about like bucket list stuff. Do you guys have that?
Yeah, sort of. Yeah. Yeah,
what do you
it's
got?
Countries. It's countries to travel countries. To, really. Yeah.
What do you got? You guys love to travel.
Yeah. Japan is massively on there.
New Zealand is really.
Let's talk about Japan. So, what are you looking forward to in Japan?
Culture.
Just culture, not golf.
Not so much. No.
Yeah, because I was going to warn you against that.
Yeah,
it's not. They're crazy for it, but it's a weird play. I mean, you should play, but it's like. You have to put aside 10 hours.
Yeah, it doesn't hit out to me. I think if we mention golf, you're talking. I mean, New Zealand's gonna be pretty cool.
Yeah.
But do you guys? I mean, you know, you said you only play 5 rounds of golf a year, which I mean,
we might.
Are you serious?
Between five and ten,
a month.
Yeah.
Who do you play with? Where are you? What are you doing? How does this work?
Friends mainly, but I'm trying to think. Well, the last few games we played.
If we're out here.
And a little bit of sponsor stuff as well. So we went around and watched sponsors. I played with Danny Willett the day after we won in Dubai, which was really cool.
Solid.
You were with Matt Wallace, weren't you? So we get, you know, so those were, that was a sponsor event with other clients as well.
But like, I mean, what are you doing? Are you that busy, or do you just not play golf when you have time off?
Yeah, I think generally the golf that we play, we have to book it in the diary because we do enjoy it. It's not work for us. You know, this is what we do is just not work. We don't feel it's work.
You every day you do something, but it's not work.
Yeah. It doesn't feel like work. So we don't necessarily think, I want a break. I want to have some time off because it just doesn't feel like it's work.
Yeah.
So if we do, we have to book it in the diary with our, we've got a couple of friends who we play golf with, Chris and Daz. And we're like,
who are they? What's their deal?
Big Daz. So Big Daz.
Darren is Daz.
Okay. Yeah, Darren Collins. So Big Daz, he looks like the white version of The Rock.
Yeah.
Oh, I like this guy already.
He's very soft, actually, still. But
he's
he's
a soft giant.
And he's the sort of guy that you can... He is a typical golfer. You can film him off camera. And he's the guy... He's the told-you-so guy. He's the guy who is trying to play... He hasn't played for 3 months, and he's trying to hit a low, high... fade draw shot under trees with a 3-wood on the first hole.
He believes he can do it.
Right. Oh, that's pretty good.
And then believes, he needed to did it.
How long have you known? You guys have been friends for how long?
Yeah, I think 20 years, 20 maybe 21
years. That's
great.
Yeah. That's great.
But so we said we're going to get a game of golf with these. Every year we said, what are we going to do? We're going to play more golf this year.
One a month.
Once a month we're going to play golf, and we've done it once
this
year.
We're averaging one a year.
That's crazy.
One a year.
But do you want to play more?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Right. Because, I mean, you guys have like... You have picture perfect swings. You have some of the best, as proximity wise, as far as the closeness of which I've stood to someone swinging, you guys may have the nicest swing for the amount of distance I've been standing next to you. Because I probably, I, you know, I mean,
kind of been pissed.
That's very nice, isn't it?
It's very nice. Yeah, I'm saying
like
it's a nice thing.
Yeah, I like it.
And also the ball flight. Those of you that weren't, I wish you had been there, because I mean, I don't know. You hit one. I've never seen a ball go that straight.
It was like
a 2-inch fade.
The one thing that we still can do, we can still hit it okay. And I think that's probably important with what we do. You know, we're telling people what to do. And you know what the social media world's like, it can be a little bit harsh. And if you're standing there and you know, you're hitting them sideways and you can't strike it, and it, when you do strike, it doesn't go very well. It's like, you know, the fact that we can still hit it well, hopefully that can continue.
Yeah, with the lack of golf that we play, we know if we're going to go out and play, there's going to be some really good stuff and there's going to be some really bad stuff as well. But we're okay with that because we don't put the time in to make it right. But we can still hit the really good stuff, which is all right.
Do you guys keep score when you play?
Not as much anymore.
It's more of a
18, really. I mean, it's like match play as well. It's always like a match. Yeah. So.
Right. Super UK vibes,
Yeah.
We don't even know what match play is over here. When was the last time you played match play, Miles?
About a week ago.
Fuck. He got me.
It's the best.
He's got my number.
It's the nicest way to
play match play in the morning, have a little lunch, play a little four ball in the afternoon.
I love playing alt shot with a group of friends every other.
Alt shot. Yeah. You know you've got time on your hands when you're playing alt shot. You know what I mean?
You know you value time and you want to get through a super quick round.
I like that.
And I like that. In the morning.
Well, most golfers in America are going out saying, I want to hit the ball as many times as possible. Or you know what I mean? Like they want to, the way people play golf is so different.
So we played this event in, it was at Lake Nona actually. It was again a sponsor event. And there was a couple of American guys got pulled in last minute. And two of them played with me and my group. And me and my group.
There we go.
There's another one that we're rolling out now.
That's your Facebook group right there.
they were quite frustrated that they weren't
me and
able
my
to
guys.
Play.
All right, I'm sorry.
Play their own ball and score it. They wanted. Yeah. Like it. They didn't want to play a scramble. We played a scramble and they didn't want to do it. They really wanted to.
I love a scramble when I'm forced to do it. But I think that's also sort of the golf. What's it called? The trajectory of the more you play, the more willing you are to just play whatever. And now I don't hit the range. I just sort of show up. I hope to lose a ball in the first shot. That's my typical. That's my go-to. First ball lost, second ball. What's next for you guys? What do you got? Like what's you got this bucket list?
Yep.
Which we didn't really answer that question at all.
No, we got to Japan, didn't we?
Japan.
We quickly got off
Augusta as well.
Japan
so
pretty easy.
Wants to take Augusta, the three of us to play Augusta.
Any
with
members?
Them, you up for that?
Any members of Augusta listening? Yeah. LOL. If there's a member of Augusta listening, you can. The chances are what?
Slim.
Very low. Slim.
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 There's
to
probably
high.
Several.
there's
probably a couple.
A lot of fans who are members of Augusta, and I say that sincerely.
Wow.
We should.
He's wearing green, so
a little,
him.
We do a little trailer at the beginning of every video we do.
Yeah.
That's our
sign-out. Yeah, we go.
I'm surprised you guys haven't been invited.
Yeah, so are we.
No, I mean, I really am.
We're still waiting.
We actually got to go this year for the first time.
Yeah, first time.
Last year, when you did. So did you see
Rick there?
Yes, we did.
Rick was there, yeah. I met him on the second green, and it was so hectic. And I was so unprepared that I couldn't even contextualize what was happening. He was like, "Hey, I'm Rick Shields," and I was like, "Nice to meet you. I don't know, let's go. Where are we?" Rory had just missed like an eagle putt. I mean, anyway, it was crazy. So you guys went there for the first time this year?
First time, Saturday, Sunday.
That's nuts.
No mobile phones or anything. It was crazy. Which was good, actually. It was nice to have a little bit of a break from the phone.
We're all there, a load of media guys, and we're all like texting and tweeting and putting our last post up, like dump it in the van and like, run there and run back and do it again.
You guys must have been mobbed there. How do you even handle that?
It was cool. It's cool. We love it. It's great. It's great meeting people.
Well, some of the questions came in about how did the matching outfits come up? Can we address that? Because I don't know the answer.
You know what? Some asked us, when did it? Like literally this week, I think.
Sean's podcast. Yeah.
Sean. Oh, yeah, we did one the other day.
Okay.
And you know what? We just always had. Okay, I'll answer this. Similar, actually. we always, when we were at the academy, we wore the same stuff.
Sure.
So it was actually part of our uniform. Yeah, absolutely.
On the team. Oh,
when we were coaching.
Right.
At the academy. And then we. And it's good because our colours are quite recognisable. Everyone says blue and white or blue and grey, blue and white. So I briefly told this conversation earlier. So we just come back off our world trip and we wanted to get some new shoes. So we always wore FootJoy. Spoke to the FootJoy guy. Budgets are tight. You know,
before everybody knows. This is before the YouTube channel started. This is the beginning.
Before it really started.
This is the beginning of it all.
It
you had the name
a little bit,
but you hadn't bought the domain, maybe or something.
Well,
like that.
We got the name. We'd done a few videos and we were getting some views and we probably had about 1,500 subscribers.
1,500 subscribers.
And we thought we were the best. You know, we were like these rock stars, golf coaches on YouTube. So we were saying to the FootJoy guy, look, you know, we need some new shoes. And he's like, okay, yeah, we can do that, but my budget's tight and I can do 50 off or something like that.
50% off.
Yeah, which is fine. We didn't
this
mind
This is reminding me of the Curtis Strange combo.
Yes. Yeah. But and I do get on really well with the guy still, actually.
Sure.
But then he was like, oh, we just couldn't afford it, really. So we spoke to Adidas, and then Adidas guy was like, yeah, we'll sort you out with something. And we had a pair of golf shoes each, the white and yellow ones.
Yeah.
Mm. Then we had two uniforms each, which were like white and blue and white, pretty much. And that was it. That was it. Because we were wearing the matching stuff, and we were literally limited to these.
That
videos.
Was what you had.
So you watched our videos from 5 years ago, 6 years ago. You'll see everything was in blue and white, white and blue.
There you go.
Same outfits. Same
I mean, it's outfits. A good look. It's a great look. I think. You know.
We did get hammered for it a little bit, but it was like, you know, I think it's. I think it was a little bit like, well, look, let's just stand out as well. If we're going to do some instruction, there's two of us. Let's just stand out, and you know. Yeah. It was our uniform, but yeah, we do.
It was a good business.
I mean, my uniform is my hair.
Yeah.
I can't
absolutely.
Cut it now.
No, you can't.
One of my friends who I think was making fun of me said that we should market a hat that has hair coming out of it.
There you go.
And I was like,
that needs to happen.
I was like, you're not my friend anymore. But he's actually quite stylish. But so
it is right though, isn't it? Because it's what you're recognizable for. So people will recognize us probably on us wearing the same clothes first,
mm-hmm.
and then have then hearing us.
Yeah,
and
sure.
Literally,
oh, yeah,
people
no,
will be
is...
on the range and they'll okay. It was the one guy in Dubai, just wasn't he? Says,
yeah.
I heard the voice.
Yeah.
That would be a cool thing you could market. Is like, you're doing good, James.
Right? I like that idea, actually. That's a good idea.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, because going back to the mental thing is we had done, you know, I've been working on this film about golf and meditation. And one of the things that we really tried to experiment with was meditation's key, but how much of playing well is just believing that you're good? Like what you said, the thing you hate the most is I always. Well, you're basically walking into a scenario saying I suck.
Yeah.
And how are you going to play well thinking you suck? And I mean, at most of the top 10s, they don't think they suck.
Yeah.
You know, and Ricky Fowler has I talked about this a while ago, he has a head cover that says believe.
Yeah.
Because at the time he had no wins. And, you know, everyone considered him overrated. And then all this, he believed so well, I guess. I don't know. I mean, we can redouble that subject again, but, you know.
And, you know, I think golfers, we're all the same. We all say the same things. We all think the same things. We've just got different levels of that confidence and belief. And I think that's what's good about it. You know, the amount of golfers that we've seen and spoke to and listened to and watch, they're all the same. Like you say, they say the same things, you know, day in, day out. So, it's just finding a way that you can deal with them and try and help them out. But
yeah, I mean, we always say that, you know, we haven't got the luxury of a caddy. So if you were your own caddy, would you say the things that, you know, would a caddy say to you the things that you're saying to yourself?
Mm.
So if you said that shot was rubbish, or I always do that, or, you know, I never hit a good tee shot here, or last time I played here, I hit it out of bounds. If your caddy said that to you, they'd be fired on the spot.
Hell yeah.
So why would you even say these things to you? Because if you're focusing on the out of bounds, guess what? You're moving towards that. We always say that.
Well, and you know, you bring that up. It's very hard to not play golf with yourself.
Mm.
It's almost impossible. Mm. Sorry. Sam, any questions? Moving on. None?
No.
Evan, you got a question?
Yeah, I think what's the most challenging thing for you guys to see in a golfer that's struggling with it? What's the hardest thing to get someone to break out of?
From a technical point of view, okay,
yeah. Like, what's the biggest hurdle that golfers face? That is challenging for you guys as instructors.
Shall I go technical one? Or I'll go technical.
If you guys
one
couldn't hear that, what's the most challenging question? What's the most difficult hurdle when you're working with somebody?
I mean, there's a couple of things. There's ways of breaking it down, but from an actual pure technique point of view, we have a swing force called the early release, where that's like casting motion, where you hit the ground before the golf ball. That is so hard to change for golfers. You can stop an open club face quite quickly. You can stop an over the top quite quickly, you know, but you try and change an early release quickly, that's very, very difficult to
do.
So from a pure technique point of view,
I'm having a very hard time not going into a joke, but you know, anyway, Miles got a question. Cole, you probably got a good question.
I'm playing today.
Who's gonna take this board meeting call in 20 minutes? Austin, chance to shine.
Yeah, I got a question. So what, for me specifically, I had a lot of moments when I was watching the PGA Tour as a kid that inspired me to want to play golf. Do you guys have a moment of watching an event on TV or being there in person that made you more interested in golf and got you into it at a young age?
I don't know if you heard that question. So it was do you have a moment from your childhood watching TV that inspired you to do your current job? Is that the question? Yeah, okay, cool.
Yeah, do you know what? The moment that got me inspired in golf was, and I didn't start playing for another 2 years, so it took a while to sink in, obviously, was 91 Kiowa when Lango missed his putt. That's tournament. I mean, that Ryder Cup.
I need the story because here I'm 10 years old at the time and I'm 20 years off playing golf right now.
Yeah,
at that age. So okay, tell me the story.
So this was 90. Well, I think it was. I'm sure it was 91 at Kira Island Ryder Cup. It was just after. It got a little bit feisty. It was just after Desert Storm, obviously around that time, and you got a few of the American guys, Corey Pavin. You know, they were wearing the camouflage. You know, so it was like, okay, this is quite strange, really, being so we were in the same conflict and what have you. But anyway. It was an amazing Ryder Cup, and you got Bernard Langer, who probably he was playing Hale Irwin, if I remember correctly, and he had like a 5-footer or a 6-footer to retain the cup. Okay, so this was to retain the cup. I think we just won at the Belfry the 2 years previous, and he missed it. But if you ask, I think pretty much anyone in that team, who do you want over that 5 or 6 foot putt to knock that putt in? It would be Bernard Langer. So the fact he missed it was obviously the agonizing sort of, oh, I've just missed and what have you, and lost the Ryder Cup. But I don't know, there's something about that because I always loved team sports. I always loved team sports. So when I saw that, I was like, this is good. But then it took me 2 years to act on it. So there you go.
That's crazy. I think for me, it was Nick Faldo was like my idol growing up. So I used to just watch him. And that, you know, I think the one experience that probably sticks out to me most was when he won the Masters when Norman was leading. So Norman was leading, 96. I think, 96. I think he had a 7-shot lead going into the last day. And then Faldo obviously came back and won the Masters then, which was just incredible. And that's, I think I remember the Pringle t-shirt that Faldo was wearing that day as well. So I think that his clothing sort of resembles a little bit there. But yeah, I think that was probably the moment where I really got into it as well.
What a couple of quick ones that was just on my mind. What do you have any, you know, I love Instagram. Obviously, you guys use it personally and for your business. Do you, what's your like favorite person or account to follow right now? I always get some information here.
It's hard to beat The Rock.
The Rock? Okay, good. Yeah. It's hard to beat The Rock. You can't both say The Rock, though.
Yeah. I'm going to go with a different guy, actually. There's a guy who I follow. It's a little bit off angle. Is a guy called Robin Sharma.
Ooh.
He's actually like a leadership expert.
Really?
So very different, sort of very...
Robin, R-O-B-I-N. Sharma.
But you know what? You say that, very similar though in lots of ways.
Sure.
I mean, it helps massively help with golf as well. I mean, you know, a lot of the stuff that he talks about in, you know, big on sort of self-mastery and stuff like that, you know, life is very similar to golf in that way. If you can, you know, a lot of the lessons that you can learn in life, you can apply on the golf course as well. So he's a really good guy to follow.
Cool. All right, I'll check that out. You know, Colt's taught me a lot of things about watches. I'm getting obsessed with watches. We talk about what are people obsessed with. Do you guys have any obsessions that lie outside of golf right now, currently? What are you obsessed with?
Ooh. Obsessed with?
Yeah.
I think the business side of things for me, I'm just obsessed with business and getting better and just...
You're the best, by the way. Continually. You're the best.
I wouldn't say that. I'm continually looking at just how can I keep getting better.
Well, and what do you mean?
Me as a person.
Okay.
Yeah, in every aspect. How can I continue to get better so I can deliver more and give more to what we do?
I think that this is the real corny part, and this is crazy because it is rare. So when you go to the PGA training camp and everyone is asked who wants to be a player, I never put my hand up, and I don't think you did either. And that's really rare because this is so corny, but we just love helping people. That's the why. That is the why. That is our big why of why we do what we do. Yes, of course, we get paid for it.
Do you think it seems corny? Do you think it seems corny because you're so successful? Do you think it seems like it's like a...
It sounds like a really good, cheap marketing tool.
But it's
not.
Look, I'm helping people.
Yeah, look how good we are.
It's like the PGA Tour being like, we've given billions of dollars away. You had to.
Yeah, exactly.
You had no choice. Yeah. You're a business league. Whatever. I don't know the loopholes there. But
it's. I mean, look, there's plenty of people in responsible places that do a lot of good. And I suppose what in my mind it would be really good to do would be to give it back, but not actually really promote it, I suppose. But
yeah.
That's kind of just promoted it then, so, but that doesn't really make sense. But
yeah, I think a lot of the people...
You just confused me to a degree. Yeah.
We just love helping people. And that's actually just, I don't know why that's the case. I'm trying to think. I like to self-examine the same as Andy about why we've led to what we've been led to.
I think it's because we've had people help us along the way, and I think the coaches and the mentors that we had growing up in the golf industry had a big, big influence on us. And I think their influence has probably led on to us wanting to do a very similar thing. And the guys who, when we were doing our PGA, the guys who were doing the PGA were there doing the PGA for something to fall back on. Mm-hmm. So they wanted to play, but I'm doing this PGA just in case I don't make it as a player, where we were going, okay, I want to do the PGA because I want to coach, which was totally different.
Yeah.
And that's probably why the difference, probably why we've had the success that we've had online, because actually we really care about what we're doing.
Yeah.
We didn't have something to fall back on. It was like, this is the choice that we're making.
Well, and even aside from that, I mean, I would imagine it's pretty hard to be successful at something that you don't deeply enjoy.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to be able to put the hours into it, you know? Mm. And also, it's just like, why would you care at that point, you know? And it goes back, we did talk about this earlier as well, but, you know, Tony Robbins, obviously, very successful person and successful at helping people be successful, which is kind of amazing and weird. Mm. But, you know, his whole thing is pick the idea where you can help the most amount of people. And so that's kind of like, I don't know, like I just think about people, you know, being interested by golf, but not being able to remain captivated or positive even, you know, golf really, it's a weird litmus test where you find yourself being negative as a grown person. And you're like, why do I do something I hate?
Yep. Absolutely.
Why? Actually, that's a great question to end on. Why do people play golf?
Challenge.
To get away from the wife. Like, that's probably one of the biggest reasons.
You're not even married. Are you married?
No.
See, there you go. All right. But no, but really, now why? What is it?
Challenged. I mean, for me anyway, personally, it's a challenge. And I think it must be for other people as well.
Because it is a hard sport to deal with. And I think a lot of the guys that come to us for coaching, they've played sports all their life, sports that are probably doing some damage to the body. And they go, okay, it's maybe time that I can give that up and do something that's not going to hurt me. And golf keeps them in the game, keeps them competitive. They can go out, have fun with the boys. And I think that social element is just massive.
And you think of it this way. You think of someone who's like, imagine me going to learn how to ski. I'm not going to be flying down the slopes like someone who's started when they're 5 years of age. Mm. So a lot of people play golf when they have done everything else, like Andy said there. So it's like, well, actually my body is formed. My ability to learn things has slowed down a lot. So there's a lot of factors in there. The body just doesn't work, basically.
Yeah.
And the brain doesn't.
I'm a bad learner.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, you could
You've
say
done
that.
All your learning. You can't learn anymore.
I mean, golf's just so great because you can take lessons and you can do whatever you want. But like, good luck. I don't know. I mean, you can take as many lessons as you want, but that doesn't mean anything, really.
You got to put the work in, definitely.
Yeah. No one's going to practice for you.
You got to do the right stuff as well. Yeah. It's huge. We did a podcast with Bo Hostler the other day, which is going to probably go about a similar time. And he was so mature in his thinking, the way that he was talking about things. And he said, look, I practiced hard, but I practiced the right stuff.
Yeah.
I didn't, you know, practice hard didn't mean I was turning up at the golf club at 8 o'clock in the morning and leaving at 10 o'clock at night and playing a few holes in between. You know, he was doing the right things.
Right.
And there's a guy who's switched on. That guy's going to be potential world number one, definitely top 10 in the world. I think he's going to be
a nice guy.
But just because he's got the right mindset, definitely. Yeah.
This is the Beau that wears the tour visor, is that true?
Yep.
Yeah.
Love
there we
that
go.
Guy.
Yeah. Inspiration, I think, maybe from you.
I doubt it. Well, and is there anything else? I mean, Colt's got one more.
He's got it.
Okay.
What's the most natural part of your swing?
Ooh. And he's like, let me think. 100%
my sway,
of it. All of it.
In a bad way.
What's the most natural part of the swing?
I will say speed. If I generally don't have to think about that, and I never had to when I first started playing because I conditioned other sports.
Mm.
So when I played sports, when I played football or soccer, you know, I was the one who took the goal kicks. You know, I had to kick it the furthest. I had to, you know. I ran pretty quickly, so I was always fast.
Right.
I was never good at long distances, but I was always fast.
So extremely long limbs.
I challenge anybody, even Evan. Evan's arms might not be quite as long as mine.
I'd say tempo is probably just comes a little more naturally to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that. You know, I good can't
question.
Answer that
never
question.
Been asked that.
Nope.
Never been asked that.
Never. Yeah, I can't answer it. It's unanswerable for me. Yeah. The most natural part of my swing is when I tee it up, when I put the tee in the ground, usually.
I love your. I think I was being very sincere and straight with you on your putting stroke. I thought it looked really solid, really good.
Thank you.
I still don't know who it's reminding me of.
Part of my game, to be honest.
Yeah, well,
with
it shouldn't be.
Do you know what I like about Eric's golf swing? The fact that he stands up and he just hits it.
Yeah.
You know, there's no, you're not sort of trying to protect anything. You're not sort of thinking, right, I need to steer this down the fairway. You tee it up, you just give it a rip, and whatever happens, happens.
Yeah.
You're not trying to guide the golf ball down there, and I think you're swinging with a lot of freedom, which is brilliant.
It's just because the start is saying, get a move on.
The starter scared the shit out of me.
Exactly.
Well, no, I mean, I think, you know, I appreciate that. Thank you. Yeah. I mean, it was fun playing this morning. It was a couple, we didn't hit that many shots, but I had a couple bad ones. And then I feel like in the end, I kind of got a little bit of control of it. But I mean, you know, like with us, you play so much golf and then at the end of the day, you're just like, what really matters?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I found that there's an inverse proportion to warming up, practicing, unfortunately, and, you know, thinking to, and in performance. Like I find that usually it's when I just stop caring it completely and we, you know, play with whatever.
Well, I thought our warm-up was good today. Those pancakes were just perfect, weren't they?
And you had three pancakes. Though. And you double drops once.
I doubled. I went to. All right, we're going to... Oh, Miles got one more.
Just one question. So, I'm genuinely curious. I've had this career up until recently, my whole life, which was a solitary venture. I was an actor, and kind of like a golfer. You play tournaments, you're polite, and you're professional, everybody. You've got a bunch of buddies who are other golfers. But it's your own... It's you know, it's a solitary thing. And recently I started a business and I have a co-founder and a partner and a teammate. And it's made the world of difference. I show up every day because I know he's going to be there. We set deadlines, we do it. You guys grew up playing the solitary sport, and yet what is fundamentally unique about what you guys do is you've got a teammate through all this. As you grow and you grow and you grow. Can you talk a bit about that advantage? Could you imagine what it would be like doing this totally solo now going forward? What's it like building your business, which is really exciting and the sky's the limit, knowing that you're 50-50 with your buddy, but also your business partner on this?
Great question.
Okay, yeah, let me just contextualize that really quick. I fucked up my audio.
Test one. Can't see what's going on anymore. Okay. Whoa. Well, this might be the first podcast in a while that we're going to edit. So the question for Miles was, you guys have an unusual, you know, situation, your golf being an individual game, but you guys are partners in this thing together. And then what was the end of the question? How are you amazing?
Could you imagine?
Could you imagine now doing this solo?
Yeah.
Can you just speak to a little bit of, as you built this, what it's been like, frankly, having a teammate, having a co-founder, and being... greater than the sum of your parts, as you build me and my golf, as a duo, just having a teammate to show up, has that made a huge difference?
I think it's the whole backbone of what we've done. To be fair, I think me and my golf wouldn't even be in existence if it wasn't for our relationship and actually what we do. Because I think what happens is when you link up and you're a team and you're a partnership, then he's growing, he's pushing me, I'm growing, and we continue to sort of add these layers to each other that you just wouldn't be able to do on your own. So if I'm having a bad day or he's having a bad day, you know you've got to show up because it's not just about you. You've got to turn up every single day. And the good thing is, if you are having a bad day, then he can pick me up or I can pick him up. And, you know, we're in this constant battle and, I suppose, evolving situation that we're always trying to push each other on and challenge ourselves to actually get better. So when you're on your own, it's so much harder to do that.
Yeah. This is the emotional part.
Well, I mean, you know, that's my favorite part about my job is if I had to go out and shoot this shit alone, I wouldn't do it.
Mm.
I just wouldn't do it. Yeah. But since we're like basically, you know, friends that get to work together is the way I see it, right? Luckily, we get to choose. I don't know. That's my favorite part about it. You know what I mean? So...
And the team that you get around you is just the most important thing, because if you've got a guy or a girl who's just not in line with your values and your vision, then it's just not going to work. And, you know, this is the strange thing, we even think a little bit more alike now, just because you spend that much time with each other. I spend more time with him than, my ex-girlfriend. You know,
nothing to do with me, by the way.
Everything to do with you, Pierce, probably. It's your fault. I think you tend to merge into the same person, you know, because, you know, you are the average of the five people that you spend the most time with. And I think, you know, that's a big part in what we've done. We surround ourselves with the right people and, you know, to help us get to what we want to get to.
It's a great point that Miles made about saying, you know, you've got to turn up. you know, I don't know, I can't even remember how many days we've had off ill in the last 5-6 years. It'd be less than five. You know, it's just you can't do it. You got to do it. You got to get in there and you got to do it. Monday's the best day of the week, and because we know that we get to spend the time to actually figure out what we're going to do that week. And I think it's, you know, it's you know, we'll always have different ideas, but we'll always agree on something. There'll never be a point when it's like, oh, we just can't agree on anything and we just won't put it up. You know, we'll always agree on something, but you got to find out how to do that. And we're very similar in how we think now. It is a bit crazy, really. And you'll find that as well. You know, anyone who's doing this, you know, they do something together like this, it's just mental, really, the amount of time we spend together. Even to the point today, we were on a bike on Venice Beach. And I was going, I'm getting a bit of saddle soy. So that's exactly what I was just going to say. But that's, yeah. So it is crazy.
Yeah.
Well, all right. Thank you so much for your time, guys.
Thank you so much.
Thank
it's been awesome.
Everybody, go. Yeah, we'll have links for you guys below. Is there anything else you need people to know about?
No. Go check out the video that you've just done.
Yeah, go check out the video with you guys.
I'm looking forward to seeing that myself.
The video. Yeah. Check out the YouTube channel. Check out the Instagram. Check out the website. It'll all be in the description below.
Thank you,
guys.
Thanks so much for having us. Yeah. Thanks, guys.